This episode of The Ready Room is brought to you by Audible.com, offering the largest selection of audiobooks for your smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter. Visit enterpriseinspace.org for more information. And if you'd like to help us keep Star Trek discussion coming to you each day, consider becoming a patron of the network through Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm and find out how you can become part of the team. That's patreon.com/trekfm.
Hi, this is Michael Dorn, Lieutenant Commander Worf from Next Generation and Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome to The Ready Room, show number 201, Escape from Lightfall. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me this week is Brandon Shea Mutala. We'll be talking about some Star Trek news, including details about the new TV series straight from Les Moonves himself, and the stamp craze that has now spread to Canada. Then in the feature, we're joined by Zachary Frueling and Philip Gilfus to discuss the original series episode, Return to Tomorrow. So let's step into the Ready Room. Hello, Biche. It's great to have you here in the Ready Room with me. I didn't realize it, but before we started recording, you mentioned that this is your first time ever co-hosting and actually doing news here on the show.
It sure is, and I'm excited to be here.
It's great to have you here. You're on so many shows. You've been on the Ready Room many times, and of course you do Melodic Treks, and you do 200% of the From There to Here's that we release. So I feel like you've been here before, but it is the first time, and I'm glad you're here because today we do have one story that relates to Canada, your homeland.
Oh, it's about those Star Trek donuts, isn't it?
Oh, do you have those? Now, those would be really cool. Are they made with Leola root?
They are not made with Leola root. They're made with Jumja.
Oh, okay. Well, that sounds sticky.
Yes, it's a syrup. Some people call it maple syrup, but we Canadians,
okay.
Yeah, we know it truly as its true name, Jumja.
Actually, Jumja. Jumja syrup. Right. You know, here in Japan, we have donuts that are made from tofu, so probably sounds strange to people over there in the U.S. and Canada, but they're actually quite good. So let's go ahead and jump into our news topics today because we have a big discussion in the feature about Return to Tomorrow, the original series episode. But before we get to that, we have something that might tie into the original series, although we don't know for sure yet. It's the new series that's coming up in 2017. And during the CBS first quarter earnings conference call recently, CBS president Les Moonves talked about the new series a little bit and gave us some bits of information that answer some questions that we've had about the series. And also, we got clarification on how the premiere episode is going to be broadcast. So I'm going to share some quotes that were excerpted by Trek Corps, and then along the way, we'll talk about this a little bit. This is what Les Moonves said. He said that Star Trek will be episodic, week by week. It won't be the Netflix way. So let's just talk about this point real quick. It's going to be episodic. Does this change anything, Biche, in the way that you were thinking and in the rumors that have been going around about the show being an anthology series, which each season would cover a different time period or a different group of characters?
I don't think it changes that. I think they can still do it. It changes one thing major for me. I have been planning already to call in sick so that I could just sit at home and watch the whole series in one day. So I guess thanks less.
Let me ask you about that, because some people have said that. Some people, because they just want to binge on new Star Trek for the first time in over a decade. Some people, because they don't want to pay for CBS All Access. So the idea was, I'll get it for 1 month. I'll just watch everything and then I'll cancel the service. But for you, either way, would you really want to do that if you've waited 11 years for new Star Trek on television? Wouldn't you want to spread it out a little bit and kind of enjoy it and savor that over time?
Nope. I want Star Trek
want it
now.
All at once. But how are you going to feel 2 weeks later or a month later?
Well, I'll be rewatching it. That's how I was planning to do it. I was planning on binging and then watching it again, like immediately, and maybe processing it at the time. Now, maybe, I mean, depending on the show, maybe because of the style of the show and whatnot, but I mean, I watched Hannibal, and I love Hannibal, and that's a show that's created by Brian Fuller, and that show is so dense and so beautiful to watch. Now, maybe it's because the subject matter is so heavy as well, but that is like the only show that I've watched in a long time where I didn't want to binge watch it, you know, because I wanted to be able to process it. So hopefully this is going to be such an in-depth, beautiful, every scene, every shot is just going to be stuffed full of information like Hannibal was, that maybe I won't want to, and I'll be satisfied by a week by week, but we'll see.
Okay. Well, for us on Trek FM, I think this is really good news because, of course, we're going to have a show about the new series, and it'll probably be an after show. In fact, I have an idea for the show that would make it a little bit more interesting than one of our standard series podcasts and more interesting than an after show, but we're still developing the plan on that. But either way, if it were all released at one time, it would completely change the nature of the way we talk about it on a podcast. I think having it be episodic, having it be weekly, is great for us and what we'll be able to do here on the network.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it's going against the way that TV shows are being produced right now on Netflix and whatnot. Like, everything is being dumped on there right now, and this will be the first one that's not.
Yeah, I think that he still didn't give any information on this, which really bugs me, but international markets. Mm-hmm. They have talked about international markets. They've talked about how selling the rights for distribution in foreign countries, well, foreign, the U.S. is foreign to me, for you guys listening in the U.S., foreign countries, is going to pay for so much of the production of the show, which I still question. But anyway, in order to do that, I think the episodic week-by-week format is better than producing 12 episodes or 15 episodes or whatever it's going to be all at one time and just dumping it out there. Because if you were going to, well, it's going to be on CBS All Access, right, in the States. So sure, they could put all the episodes up there all at one time if they wanted to. But let's take Japan, for example. If it's going to be shown on NHK, they can't do that. It's just regular television. It needs to come out week by week. And so it's possible that thinking about the bigger picture of distribution played a role in them selecting this as the format, even though it does go against the trend in television right now.
Yeah, because we still don't know in Canada how it's going to air. And I mean, I'm concerned about that. I mean, because the cable companies, like, we have Netflix and we have like YouTube to watch everything. That's what we watch everything with is on Netflix. And I mean, I don't have time to watch a lot of TV. So it's all kids stuff that we watch on our Netflix. So I'm hoping that they get Netflix for other countries, but I mean, I'm okay either way. I mean, I only pay $8 a month right now for Netflix. That another $10 a month or whatever it's going to be is not a lot of money. But, I mean, cutting the cord is the way that everything's going to be going in the future. And people are saying that, you know, it's going to be too expensive and whatnot for this extra $10 a month. Well, in like 15 years or whatever, there's going to be no satellite. There's going to be no cable, you know? So,
yeah,
it'll be interesting.
Well, they're kind of straddling that line right now, right? I mean, it is cord cutting in that it's CBS All Access. It is a streaming service. So you can be a cord cutter and you can get the show. And in the US, it's the only way you're going to be able to get the show. But the format is still more traditional.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go on to a couple more points that he made here. He said CBS All Access is the only place to get the entire stack of CBS shows. And this January, we will begin streaming our first original series. All Access will be the home of the first original Star Trek series in 11 years. The premiere episode of Star Trek will debut simultaneously on All Access and the CBS television network with subsequent episodes exclusively on All Access. Now, this is really important because this is the first time that I have seen clear language about this. It's been very vague up to this point about whether they were going to show the first episode on both All Access and CBS proper, or if they were going to do some kind of special on CBS, the network, that's not the actual first episode, but it's kind of like a promotional or an introduction. But you'd have to go to CBS All Access to see the actual episode. Finally, this is very, very clear. The first episode will be on CBS All Access and CBS, the television network, off air. You'll be able to see it that way. For the second episode, then you'll have to go to CBS All Access. So I'm glad that we have clarity on that now. The other thing that he says in this comment, I stopped halfway through, he says that we have one of the best creative teams behind the show and we're confident that its large, passionate fan base will lead to substantial, profitable subscriber growth. Once again, every other streaming service was after Star Trek. We could have cashed in for a lot of money selling it to Netflix, Amazon, Hulu. They were all very interested in it. We know that Star Trek is a high-priced, quality product, and knowing that we will have very strong international sales, which we are already getting in, it's important that we show everybody that All Access is a priority for us, and there are a lot of very rabid Star Trek fans who are going to sign up for it. So the only thing that concerns me there a little bit is that, and I understand this because it's business, I say this over and over on the shows, he didn't say we have to show everyone that Star Trek is very important to us. He said we have to show everyone that All Access is very important to us. So this Star Trek series is less about bringing back Star Trek because of the love of Star Trek. It's about getting CBS into the streaming space, into the cord-cutting space, and establishing All Access as the future of their business. Does that concern you at all about what they might do with Star Trek?
I don't think so. I think it's, you know, it's him talking to his shareholders and whatnot, saying, look, All Access is the way that we're deciding to go. This is a priority for us. And I mean, they're choosing a high profile franchise like Star Trek to launch it. But I don't think that he's saying that, you know what, we're just putting a Star Trek on here just to try and get some people here. I think that they are going to take the Star Trek show seriously, and he's just talking to his shareholders. Like you said, this was taken from a phone call, right? Like a meeting or something?
Yeah, first quarter earnings call.
Yeah. So he's talking to the people that want to make the money, and he's saying, look, this is how we're going to make more money for you in the future. All Access is the way that we're going. This is the direction of our company from now on. We're focusing on All Access, and I don't think that that takes away at all any of my expectations for what this Star Trek show is going to be, because they've done so much good on the back end with Brian Fuller, Nick Meyer, and who, like Roddenberry, getting Roddenberry on. They're getting the right names in to show that they care.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think they're going to do a really good job with the series, but I can see how some people might read this and feel like they're just trying to cash in on Star Trek. But I don't think that that's the case here.
Yeah, that's not how I read it at all.
The last thing I'll add on this story before we move on is I'm still seeing these posts on Facebook, and sometimes people even post them on the Trek FM brand page, about how this is all going to fail in a few months. CBS is going to be forced to move Star Trek off of All Access onto the actual CBS TV network, broadcast it off air, and that All Access in general is just going to be a complete failure. And I really think that people who think this, the fans who think this, need to stop. They need to take a deep breath. If you love Star Trek, this is how Star Trek is going to be produced, and this is how it's going to be distributed. And if you're unhappy about it, I get it, but CBS isn't going to change this because you think that it's going to fail. The future of television, and you know, Biche, you put this really well. I'm also a cord cutter, like you. That's the future of television. CBS is a corporation. CBS is looking at what is happening in the industry, and they're seeing that their future is in streaming services. Their future is in producing shows in the way that they're going to produce this one. It's not in off-air television. And they are beginning a transition that's going to move them to that part of the business. And they have to if they want to survive. And the other networks are going to do the same thing. And this call for, you know, I see petitions. People are asking me to sign petitions trying to force CBS to abandon this plan and just put it on regular TV. I won't sign petitions like that because I think it's short-sighted. That's right. Not where business is going, you know?
Absolutely. I think those are ludicrous statements. I mean, I'm too young for it, but I know that it's happened. This happened in the early 80s, the late 70s, whatever it was, when cable companies started coming around.
Yeah.
Why would I pay for television when I get six channels over the air for free, right? And nobody thought that cable would stick around and whatnot. And here we are now with satellite. You know, I cut satellite because I was paying $150 a month for like 9 bajillion channels that I didn't watch. And I just one day realized, I'm like, what am I doing? It's not worth it for me. But I mean, I was paying $150 a month for satellite. Now I'm paying $8 a month for Netflix and I still don't have time to watch it. You know, yeah. But this is the way that it's going in the future. This is the way that all networks are going to go. Every device that we have nowadays, you can watch television on. It's designed for convenience and designed to watch wherever you want. That is the future. You can watch all this stuff on your cell phone.
Yeah. Yeah, it's exactly where it's headed. And for many of us, like you and me, it's how we watch TV now. You know, I don't know how long now, 3 years probably, all my TV comes from Netflix, Hulu, streaming services. It's just how I consume stuff. I don't sit down and watch TV the way that I did 10 years ago. So I think CBS is making a smart move here. And I think that very vocal but small group of fans who are just determined to try to change it should put their energy towards something a little bit more productive and support the franchise that they love by at least being positive about it, even if they're not going to sign up for CBS All Access, because a big corporation is not going to suddenly change a plan that they've been developing for years and that they're basically banking the future of their company on.
Right. I just need to know which one they're going to be launching it on in Canada so I can subscribe to that one. Tell me already. I can subscribe.
Well, that's the thing, and that's why I recorded that kind of ranting hyper channel that I did a few months ago about how some of the Star Trek websites in the US are just taking Moonves and CBS at their word that it's going to be available easily to everyone around the world, because history tells us that's not the case. They have to prove it to me with some actual information, and yet again, we still have heard nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see where that goes. Okay, well, let's move on, and we have one other story that I want to talk about today. And that's the one I mentioned at the top of the show about Canada. Canada is getting in on the stamp craze. Speaking of Hyperchannel, which I just mentioned, I think I've done 3 Hyperchannels over the past few months about stamps being issued by different countries around the world. And they're usually small countries. Of course, the US has their stamp that they are doing. But a lot of small countries are cashing in on Star Trek and selling those stamps as collectibles to people outside of the countries, of course. And they've honored DS9, Voyager, Enterprise, the women of Star Trek, all sorts of things. Now, Canada wants to get in on the game as well. And your home country has announced its own lineup of lickable memorabilia. And you told me on the other side of the room,
the other side of the room,
that you saw these today. So tell us about them.
I did. I was actually at a post office today, and they had them. And the image that you've got here for us to look at has the 5 faces, which is Kirk, Spock, McCoy, Scotty, and Kor. And then there's 2 ships, a Klingon battlecruiser and the Enterprise. And they also had something else. It was like a holographic one, like one of those. Well, I think they're called lenticular, where you like tilt it and the image like moves a bit. And I didn't really get a chance to look at it. It looked like it was them jumping through the Guardian. So I'm guessing if you turned it, they would kind of jump through it. But, you know, it was neat to see them. They had a nice, it was probably by an 8x10 with a picture of Kirk and then the stamps off to the side. And I think it was about 10 or 15 bucks. And then they had the 2 ship stamps on their own. And it was they were like $8 for the 2 or something like that. But the neat thing is that the 2 ship stamps are actually about a quarter the size of the other stamps. They're actually much smaller. And so you could probably fit 4 of the ship stamps in the space of one of these faces stamps. So the faces stamps are a little bit bigger. So
how large are these faces stamps?
I would say
approximately,
probably about an inch by an inch and a half or something like that. You know, like 3/4 of an inch by an inch and a half, something like that.
Okay. So the ship ones are quite small then.
Yeah, they are. Yeah. They're the small ones for sure.
Okay. It's interesting. Our stamps in Japan are rather large compared to mm-hmm. American stamps. And I'm very accustomed to that. So I'm trying to picture the faces as you describe them. Those seem pretty normal. The ship ones, yeah, those feel like they would be really tiny almost.
Yeah. Yeah, they're pretty small.
Interesting.
They had a display that they were going to be setting up. Like, they had the prices on it and stuff. There's going to be other versions of it. Like, they had a spot for, like, a big, you know, 10 by 20 lithograph or something. So I'm guessing you can get large print copies of these stamps as well. But that was, like, tagged at, like, $140 or something like that.
Well, speaking of that, and wouldn't you know it, as we're recording this show, the Canada Post website is down. So it's undergoing maintenance. I have this link in the show notes labeled, check out all the 50th anniversary bling from Canada Post. And I just clicked through and we can't see it. The site is undergoing maintenance. But I did look at it last night. And so I don't know from memory everything that they had, but they had all kinds of stuff that you could buy rolls of these stamps. They had like Star Trek stamp dispensers honoring the 50th anniversary. As you're mentioning here, lithography. They had a whole page, and I'll put the link to it in the show notes, and I'm sure the site will be up probably as soon as we finish recording the show. But you can click through and see. And Canada Post, they're cashing in on Star Trek's 50th, apparently.
The website's down. They were probably attacked by a moose.
Is that what happens in Canada? The whole website. There's like a moose roaming through the post office. And yeah. All right. Anyway, so these are cool. I like the designs. As I said in the Babel conference on Facebook, if they had been a little bit more creative, they would have spelt Canada with a Q, apostrophe, and then a capital A at the end.
I like it.
So here's another question while we're talking about stamps. Our art director, Aaron Harvey, did this great stamp sheet recently that he posted in the Babel conference called the Disheveled Janeway Collection. And they were stamps. It was a sheet of stamps showing Janeway being flustered, having her hair really messed up, different scenes from Voyager, you know, like a scene from Year of Hell, things like that. And it got me thinking about what other stamp collections that will never get made, but we would like to see. They probably should be made. And I have an idea for each series, but have you given any thought to stamps you'd like to see?
I got a couple here, definitely. I think that one that's actually kind of a logical one would be a Dr. McCoy series, and they could be the I'm a Doctor, Not a series.
Okay.
And then they could have like every time he said that line, you could have like 80 different stamps, right? I'm a doctor, not a, and then just have him with his, that goop on his hands and just call it bricklayer, like underneath. And then
okay.
He's yanking on Julie Newmar and says escalator or something like that.
So he would actually be either holding or standing on or otherwise illustrating the things that he's not.
Yes. I think so, yes.
In the image.
So, okay. No, more all like right. The quote where he says it in the episode. Because in Devil in the Dark, he says, I'm a doctor, not a bricklayer, right? But he's right. Got like so the would, goop on his hands. So.
He'd have the stuff on his hand, right? Yeah, I get it.
Right, and then he's, I'm a doctor, not an escalator.
I'm a doctor, not an escalator. He would like riding an escalator on the stamp.
Sure.
Yeah, something like that, yeah. Okay, yes. I like it, yeah.
Yep.
All right, what other ideas do you have?
They could do a collection of Garrick modeling different swimsuits that he's designed.
Swim
the Garrick
suits.
Swimsuit collection.
Wow. Okay. That's interesting. I didn't know where you were going with that. Now, Garrick modeling suits or something he made, I could see, but swimsuits, interesting.
Cardassian swimsuits.
Yeah. Any others?
They could do one. Like, I really think that Deep Space Nine got better when Sisko grew a goatee and shaved his head. They could do like the shaved head collection for the captains, and they could do all of the captains with shaved heads and goatees.
So including Janeway.
Especially Janeway.
especially Janeway. That would be interesting to see for sure. And I think they should expand it out too, and they could have like Captain Hernandez of the Columbia. I think that would work. Yeah, that would be.
And Captain Kelsey Grammer.
Yes, exactly. Well, I have one for each series. This is what I would do if I were working at Canada Post or any other post office around the world who wants to get in on this. For the original series, I would like to see the stunt doubles collection. So these stamps would highlight the stunt doubles of the characters that we know caught in action in high definition in the remastered original series, because you have these wonderful scenes where when you watched it originally or even on VHS, and maybe on DVD, you didn't really notice quite so much that that wasn't the actual actor. One that really stands out to me is in Day of the Dove when Kirk and Kang are fighting. And you get these close-ups on Kirk, and it's just some other guy. It doesn't look anything like William Shatner, right? And so I would love to see something like that where it just highlights the stunt doubles from each character, but using an actual scene that you can see on Blu-ray.
I posted a picture on the Babel conference when I watched Mirror Mirror, and like somebody had like grabbed Spock in a chokehold like this, and they showed his face, and it was, yeah, you could tell it was completely not him, and they had just like, I don't know, they slapped like a beaver pelt on his mouth or something for his goatee. Like it was just this thick black goatee.
I've also noticed on the Next Generation Code of Honor when Yar is fighting with the little mace thing
like
that she has.
Man.
Yeah, it's like a man. Yeah, it's not even a woman's stunt double. And it's so obvious in some of the scenes. Yeah, absolutely.
It's just that scene when she like flips that guy too. Like there's not even much going on. And it's like this little man. I don't know. It's funny.
Yeah, it's like cut that out somehow. Yeah. Bad editing on that. So speaking of the Next Generation, the stamp collection that I would produce for TNG is the Riker pose collection, where it would just be scenes of Riker propping his foot up on stuff.
I love it.
Now for DS9, I'm going to go a little bit more interpretive here. It really calls on the mailer, person mailing the letter, to really use their imagination. This is the Many Moods of Morn collection, where you see Morn on the stamp. He kind of looks the same every time, but you know that there's something else going on with him. Maybe he's just told a joke. Maybe he's contemplating his plans for the weekend, or maybe he's trying to decide what to send his mother for her birthday.
Would it be like the many faces of Darth Vader, like those shirts that you can buy, or the many emotions of Spock?
Yes.
It's like, and then it says kinda underneath like it has that. A picture of Vader. It says happy, and then the next one says sad, and the next one says angry, and they just all look the same.
Exactly. It would be kind of like that. Exactly. All right. So that's my DS9 one. For Voyager, I want to do the Deaths of Harry Kim collection. So you can see Harry being sucked out into space. You can see Harry waking up in a coffin. There are so many possibilities for Harry Kim.
I love it. I think I would buy them all.
The last one, of course, Enterprise. This one's also maybe a little bit obvious. The Starfleet Blues collection, which would just show each crew member in their skivvies. So I'm curious, everyone who's listening, what ideas you have for stamps, since apparently everybody's going to do Star Trek stamps here in the 50th anniversary year. So go to Facebook, go to the Babel Conference, type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook if you're not already a member, and click join and we'll let you in. But, you know, we need to have a big stamp discussion, I think, over there. And of course, you can also send your ideas to us through Twitter at TrekFM is the username. And if you want, you can email them to me, trek.fm/contact, and tell me your ideas there as well. All right, Bishay, well, that's all we have in news. Before we jump into the feature, I'd like to tell everybody a little bit about the other shows that we have here on the network. In fact, I don't want to tell you about them. I want to play a clip for you. So here are some other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
And I'm saying this in a really good and loving way. Sometimes some things can't be unseen, but there is nothing cooler than Disco Bones. I mean, I know we're supposed to be in the 23rd century somewhere, but that was squarely 1970-something.
Oh, yeah, sure. It was perfect.
The Orb.
I love the Jumja stick. He's like, yeah. You know, here's this and this and this, and here's a Jumja stick. And I was picturing, like, in a Bajoran hotel, like, when housekeeping comes in and they make the bed in the hotel, do they put, like, a Jumja stick on the pillow? Because that seems like it would be really messy.
The 602 Club.
You can definitely see that something does probably need to change, you know, for the Avengers. But is that what needs to change, that they need to be have the oversight from somebody else? And the fear of Cap is really that we've kind of started off on this road to serfdom.
Saturday Morning Trek.
The 30 seconds that we spent on Scotty singing probably could have been used with a really fun, why are all these women in security uniforms standing around us?
Rather than just, you're more handsome than ever.
Yeah, that, what was that about?
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of these shows and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe. We have 3 to 4 new podcasts for you every day, 7 days a week. We are just talking Trek all the time here, and we cover, of course, every series. We have a dedicated show, including the animated series. We also talk about philosophy, women's issues, music with Bichet here. We talk about the work of Star Trek creatives beyond Star Trek. We even talk about non-Trek stuff on the 602 Club, all the other fandoms that we love. We have so much content for you here on the network, and you can find our shows everywhere that you get your podcasts. Of course, you'll find us in iTunes, where we're a featured content provider with Apple. Just go to itunes.com/trekfm. That'll take you right into our artist section. You can also find us on Stitcher, TuneIn, Windows Phone, BlackBerry, SoundCloud. You can go to the website. You can stream from the show pages. You can download the MP3 files. If you're an Android user, you can now find our shows in Google Play Music. Just search for us in the app, and the shows should come up. They're supposed to be in there now. And you can also find us in third-party podcatchers like Overcast and Pocket Casts and Instacast, which is still out there. You might have it on your device. And many, many others. Just search for Trek.fm and you'll find our shows there. And we hope you enjoy all the great Star Trek content that we have for you here on Trek FM. All right, Bichet, let's go ahead and bring in Zachary and Philip and talk about the original series. Having your body taken over by an alien is a risk every Starfleet officer takes, and as Kirk has said, risk is our business. Being possessed of your own free will, however, isn't usually how it works. But when the disembodied voice of Jimmy Doohan asks a favor, it's hard to resist. That's what happens to Captain Kirk in Return to Tomorrow, and today we're going to talk about this classic episode. To help us do that, we're joined by one-third of the hosting trio from Earl Grey, Mr. Philip Gilfus. Hey, Philip.
Hello, Chris. It's great to be here.
I am very confused as to why there's a giant flashing orb in the middle of the Ready Room right now.
This is not from the orb. This is actually full of Earl Grey.
Oh, that's why there's a little tap on the front. I got it.
Yes. Yeah, no, I'm happy to be here, Chris. You know, it's been a while. Things are a little bit more starker looking than I'm used to. A little lack of carpeting. But no, it's great to be here on the Ready Room.
Good to have you back. And also joining us, or perhaps he's just been hanging out on the other side of the room since last time, from Matatrex, it's Zachary Frueling. Hey, Zachary.
Hey, Chris. Thanks. You know, I don't actually go anywhere. I just sleep in the corner. That's the running.
Yeah,
running
you've
joke.
Got a cot over there. I see that.
That's it's starting convenient. To get ripe in here.
It is. I know. I need to have a shower installed in the Ready Room if Zachary's just going to live here.
Yeah, this is like the third time in a row other than the 200th episode last week.
Right. And don't forget that there was a big gap between 198 and 199. So you were here for a long time, and that's really too long to go without bathing, Zachary.
That's okay. I saved up my replicator rations. I'm good.
Excellent. All right. Well, we're going to talk about Return to Tomorrow today, and that's confusing to say. And before we do that, though, a synopsis for those of you who haven't seen this episode in a long time. While in a region of space hundreds of light years beyond the furthest reaches of human exploration, the Enterprise receives a distress signal from a once Classium planet that appears to be devoid of life. In fact, looking at it, it's kind of hard to believe that it ever was Classium, but they say it was. Its atmosphere is gone and the world has been dead for at least a half a million years. Yet somehow a voice is calling out to the Enterprise, because that's what happens in the original series. This planet is called Eret, or Terra spelled backwards, by the way, although the name is never mentioned on screen, but that is the name given to the planet in the script. Deep beneath the planet's surface, the landing party discovers an intelligence named Sargon, who is inside a giant ball, and he claims to be from a race that seeded worlds throughout the galaxy. Perhaps, he speculates, Kirk and his crew might be the offspring of his people. He takes over Kirk's body temporarily and introduces Kirk, Spock, Bones, and Dr. Pulaski, I mean, Lieutenant Commander Anne Mulhall, to two more members of his race. He explains that they, meaning the disembodied spirits, would like to borrow human bodies long enough to construct humanoid robots into which they will transfer themselves. Kirk decides this is a good idea, which is something we're going to discuss today, or at least it fits in well with the Enterprise's mission of exploration. And from that point forward, a struggle for survival ensues as Sargon's colleague Hinnok decides that life in a mechanical body is just not for him. In the end, spoiler alert, everyone survives thanks to a little Katra magic and behind-the-scenes plotting by Sargon. And it's all topped off with a kiss. So let's jump into our discussion of this episode. Philip, I'm going to start with you because originally we had three choices for today's Ready Room, and one of them was the alternative factor. And originally, I misread our planning sheet, and I thought that's the episode everyone wanted to do. And then I said, nope, it's supposed to be Return to Tomorrow. You said, thank goodness, I would have been struggling with the other one. So tell me why Return to Tomorrow is a better choice for you.
Well, and correct me if I'm wrong, alternative factor is Lazarus, right?
Yeah. What's the matter, God. Antimatter?
Oh, my, that episode. Oh, oh, boy.
Which I will state is one of my top five episodes of TOS.
Oh, boy. That is the time squared of TOS for me. That's like, can I just watch the 10 minutes that matter? Because this is just basically spinning our wheel for like 40 minutes.
Are you going to watch the 10 minutes of matter? Not the 42 minutes of antimatter?
No. And you really can't combine them either with commercials. Nothing good will happen.
No, well, you could combine them, but the show would be too explosive for viewers.
Right, too explosive for TV. Yeah, well, this is one of those ones, like, on TNG, or on Earl Grey, we did a kind of, not forgettable TNG episodes, but episodes you just don't really remember. So this is a TOS episode that I don't really remember, like Return to Tomorrow. And so I'm like, I don't remember bad or good. And so then I'm watching, I'm like, oh, that one, the disembodied thing. But it's not a one that's neither good nor bad, so I was glad to get a chance to watch it where alternative factor, I would have had to like get like the Red Bulls and the Mountain Dews out, maybe some smelling salts at some point. So that's why I was glad we did this one instead.
All right. So what are your initial thoughts on Return to Tomorrow?
Well, I mean, I thought the origin story for Pulaski was interesting, and I'm glad we finally got to see it. And I like that we got to see Nimoy getting to do some non-Spock acting, right? Yeah, that's always a good excuse for him to do that. And if it's not getting high off flowers and spores, it's something else. So I thought this was a good episode for that. But overall, I really did enjoy it. It's been a while. So like I remembered vaguely the plot, but not the specifics. And of course, the speech, which we will talk about. I've seen, love it. It's a YouTube favorite clip that I have. But it was interesting, and there were some highs and lows, but overall it was kind of good to like settle down like a comfortable glove. It's been a while since I've watched TOS, and so I'm like, oh yeah, glad to be back here on the old NCC 1701 with Chapel with her weirdo insignia on her uniform that doesn't seem like it fits, barely hanging on with two strands. But no, I really enjoyed it.
It does have that giant cross on it, right?
Well, it's like everyone's uniform was made, like even Uhura's, even all the women who have like the low cut still have an insignia that was sewn on the uniform. Hers was made last minute, the first, and forgot to put an insignia, so they just like Velcro or safety pins the insignia on there. So I'm waiting for it to fall off on some scene there. But yeah.
That thing is, it always is weird to me because, you know, she's medical and whatnot. So is she not in Starfleet? Is she in Starfleet? Because, you know, McCoy just has the regular, you know, the regular science one, yeah, right, on his.
But
so,
but the medical one with the red cross on it, that was part of the insignia series, I guess, that Starfleet released.
Maybe she's
it
a
was
volunteer.
Part of that, so
she's a volunteer from the Red Cross.
Maybe. So I don't know why Bones just has the science one. Maybe only nurses, but then again, I'm pretty sure we see nurses who don't have that one. So maybe it was made especially for Chapel. I don't know. Maybe she's sent off for it. Maybe like if you save enough lives, you can send off for the special patch. I don't know.
Do you have to get like the yellow cards you put in? And if you get like the five yellow cards that you put in the food dispenser, you send those in to the space yeah, whale?
Get it out of the space Cracker Jack box, you know?
Hey, Cracker Jacks has announced that they're not going to put toys in their boxes anymore. Did you hear about this? They're going to put cards in with download codes now so you can get something for your smartphone.
Boo, millennials. Why do you ruin this world?
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Thumbs down. Thumbs down.
What are Cracker Jacks?
Ask our Canadian friend.
You see, in the ancient game of baseball, we'll explain.
Okay, so, Bichet, what are your initial thoughts on this episode?
Again, this is one of those ones where it's like, I think it's because of the title, where it's one of those kind of forgettable ones, and then you go back to it. I mean, it's got Kirk's famous speech in it, but going into it, it's like, which one is this one again?
Do you get it Return confused with Tomorrow is Yesterday and All Our Yesterdays?
Yeah, I do. I do not understand the title for this one, okay? Return to Tomorrow does not make sense. Tomorrow is Yesterday makes sense, right? Because, you know, tomorrow they went to the past. What this Return to Tomorrow doesn't make any sense whatsoever. I wanted to ask that.
Well,
what the heck does this title mean?
I think philosophically there has to be some underpinning to this, Zachary.
Well, I was going to say it makes sense, Brandon, if you think of it as a song lyric.
Oh.
Return to tomorrow.
Now, Zachary, is that your standard line for anything you don't know the answer yes, to? Well, it makes sense if you think of it as a song lyric.
Only when Brandon's on. Yeah.
I love it when he uses that at work. His boss says, I do not understand why you sent these papers to the wrong office. Well, it makes sense if you think of it
yeah,
as a song
lyric.
Yeah,
just sing it. Yeah.
Well, I look at it this way, Bichet. From the standpoint of Sargon, Thalesa, and Henoch, they've been disembodied, and for them, they're returning to an existence where they can actually interact with the environment, and anything that they do from that point forward will be tomorrow for them. So they have returned from destruction to live in tomorrow.
After 600,000 years, that's a lot of tomorrows.
Escape from Lightball. That would have been a great title.
Escape from Lightball.
Escape from Lightball. But
hey,
I mean,
like, brought to you by GE. Perfect. Would have been perfect for the original series.
We bring good things, and it turns out bad things to life.
I thought right, it was the Escape from the Horde of Eggs.
Yeah. Could be. All right. So any other thoughts? Any other initial thoughts on the episode? Boy, we are going off the rails.
Well,
left and right. they plop us back up on the tracks and we go straight back off again today, apparently.
I kept looking for Kyle Riker.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I will only call her Pulaski during this whole episode, and I will only call him Evil Spock. I'm not learning names, okay? Zargon's the only one I'm learning, okay? So it's Zargon. Evil Spock and Pulaski.
We could call her Dr. Mulholland Drive.
What if Kyle Riker travels back in time and ends up on the Enterprise? Do you think that Lieutenant Commander Mulhall would sleep with Riker's dad?
No, but I think that that one woman who'd visited the Enterprise during the Medusa incident might.
Oh, Miranda Jones, yeah.
Yeah. No.
Probably so. He'll just give her a rose. And
well, by any other name.
Yeah. Okay, so Bichet, any real meaningful thoughts here on this episode? Any initial thoughts?
I think it's an interesting episode, but it's not one of the standout ones for me. It's good, but it's not great for me.
Okay. There we go. Very concise. Took us a long time to get there. See, Bichet's initial thoughts could have lasted only 5 seconds, but instead I think we recorded about 4 minutes of us going off the rails.
Yeah, but Chris, it makes sense as a song lyric.
It does. That's true. Zachary, what are your initial thoughts on the episode?
You know, this episode's a little tough for me. It has all the makings of a classic Star Trek episode. You've got godlike aliens. You've got disembodied consciousness. You've got someone kissing Captain Kirk. You know, good philosophical themes we're going to talk about a little later. Yet something just falls flat for me. Like the first half of the episode is really good. I'm into it. I understand what's going on. And then the last half just for me just gets so convoluted with all of this body and consciousness swapping and, you know, the relatively confusing end about going off into oblivion. So something just falls flat. But it feels like it should be a brilliant episode that didn't really gel.
For me, and again, we'll get into this in more detail later, but the confusing part, I think it starts when, well, maybe it starts even earlier, but at least when they're in sick bay and Sargon and Thalesa release Kirk and Mulhall because of what's happening to their bodies, but Hinnock stays in Spock's body and then he and Chapel go off to the pharmacological, what do they call it? You know, this the pharmacology lab. Or center, or whatever they have on the ship. It's kind of not clear that Sargon has released Kirk's body at first, and then you kind of start wondering if the interaction before that was actually Kirk and Mulhall faking it, or if that was Sargon and Thalesa interacting, or what's going on, and it just gets fuzzier from there, because Sargon's whole plan that he's scheming behind the scenes is just sort of... You find out at the end that he's been doing something, but you don't know that he's doing anything up until that point.
I couldn't really decide how this consciousness swapping works. It seems like, you know, sometimes it seems to force you out of your body and you have to go into the receptacle. Sometimes you can share a body, like, you know, Spock and Chapel share a body for a while. It's really confusing.
And apparently those receptacles, they're kind of like Wi-Fi. If you get too far away from them, you can't transmit data anymore.
Well, it's because the blue light can't reach you.
Is it the blue light? Okay, it's all about the blue light.
Yeah.
I see. All right. Well, let's get into a real topic then and talk about the fact that they're going to let Sargon and his buddies take over their bodies in the first place. And I was trying to think of it in terms of exploration and the final frontier. And when we get to this scene where they're sitting around the conference table. First of all, I love the hard cut from the chamber deep beneath the planet to the conference room with Scotty thinking they're crazy for the idea. That was kind of nice to just go straight into that.
You want a what?
Yeah, exactly.
I did not like that at all. It was so out of place. They have never done anything like that in a Star Trek episode. Yeah, there's like none of that in the original series. It feels weird, like there's a scene missing or something like that to me with that hard cut.
Well, yeah, I can see that comparing it to how Star Trek had been directed up to that point, it might feel weird. From a storytelling standpoint, though, I like it because let's just not waste time with, you know, let's have them all stand in one place and beam back up to the ship and have a conversation about what happened and then plan a meeting and then go to the meeting room. I like that they just move straight back to the next part of the story. But what I did find weird was Kirk's speech and his whole reaction to the idea. He really gives this very, the combination of the way Shatner delivers the lines and then the swelling music, it feels like some great leader giving this great inspirational speech, but the content of it is like, really, Kirk, you think this is a good idea? You're going to let people take over the bodies of the ship's command crew? It seemed odd and out of place for Kirk's character to me.
That's because he is of the body, Chris.
He is a body.
No, he is of the body.
He is of the body. Well, yes, yeah, he is of the body. That's true.
I mean, I know Landrew is not here. But,
and apparently he has a very nice body because that was mentioned here in the episode, which I tweeted as sort of a companion. You know, Bichet here does these Trek of Him quotes of the day. So I have kind of a companion thing now, quotes out of context.
He's got such a nice body, he's chomping at the bit to share it.
And I was watching...
You're to be commended, Doctor.
Now, I was watching this episode, and I had my lady who was sort of like in the other in the same room, but kind of doing something else. But every time there was a line, she would look up at me, and I would look up at her. I was like, "Yeah, you just heard that." So these are the ones I wrote down here. The ones I wrote down are, "Your probes have touched me, Mr. Spock." So that was one I wrote down there. And then there was seed planting. Zargon mentioned that several times, so that's very important. Zargon wants you to know he's planted seeds just all over
the galaxy.
He has sowed his wild seeds all over this galaxy. So,
yeah. So, what do you think about Kirk's reaction, though? Was this out of character for Kirk to buy into this plan so easily and enthusiastically?
Well, like
yes, but the music helped.
Okay. All right. Well, that takes us back to Everything Sounds Better as a Song lyric.
Well, like, to me, I didn't have a problem with Kirk per se, because I guess I just buy the fact that, okay, if he just instantly mind-melded with Zargon, you know, because the only reason he wouldn't be would be, like, either trust or risk. Well, if he's theoretically mind-melded with Zargon, there's trust. Okay, I completely trust this guy. We've zapped each other's brains. I know he's telling the truth, blah, blah, blah. So it's more of the risk to our body, and you know, it's the whole, like, well, you'll get all the technology forever and all our problems will be solved. To me, the person I had that didn't make sense to me was Pulaski. Because she went from, like, nah, to, like, yeah. I never got the middle part of, like,
right.
Well, you make a good point. I heard the swelling music. I'm down now. It was just more like, no, I'm not yes.
Well, for me, it was... I can see her point of view as a scientist. She's an astrobiologist on the ship. She's one of these characters, by the way. It always amazes me. Like, the Enterprise has someone doing every job you can imagine. Like, if they encountered a planet that had very unusual weather patterns, then chief meteorologist of the Enterprise would show up in the episode, and they would have this room where they have, like, giant weather screens and things like that. They always have this person around when they need them. It's like in Space Seed. Of course, yeah, we have an archaeologist on the ship, and she's like fascinated by this stuff. We've never mentioned her before, but she's here.
But my problem with Pulaski was this, and not, I mean, other than what I just mentioned, but just what you mentioned, Chris. Okay, what color uniform is she wearing? Red. What does she do?
Why is it not blue?
I know the real reason is because when I was watching the landing party, I got tan. I have blue, so we need something else, or you know, and we need a red in there just for the color palette. But I'm like,
well,
she should be wearing blue.
Also, Sargon wouldn't let the security guys beam down with them, so that's why they couldn't have red with the security guys.
The problem that I had with the security guys, I don't know if y'all noticed, they weren't even on the transporter pad. That's why they didn't beam down. I'm like, guys, you gotta get all the way.
So
what you're saying
is that Sargon is not as powerful as he appeared to be. The guys were just standing in the wrong place.
Yeah, you got to, you know, you can, yeah. This isn't a 1 foot in, 1 foot out, shake it all
so
about.
So Sargon got lucky right there. I like it. So about Mulhall, though, I can see her thinking like, well, this is a great opportunity for me to learn more about an alien race by actually having them possess my body for a while. I can kind of understand that more so than Kirk wanting to do it.
Well, I can kind of understand Kirk asking Spock to take such a risk. You know, Kirk asks a lot of his senior staff, but for him to ask, you know, what's frankly kind of a junior level officer to take this risk, I don't think I really understand Kirk's reaction. I think on the other hand, though, I think I understand Kirk's general point that, like, you know, hey guys, we're out here on this mission. Why the hell did you sign up for a mission like this if you weren't willing to take these kinds of risks? I kind of get that. But my problem is that I can picture Kirk giving an equally impassioned speech for the exact opposite point. You know, we shouldn't take unnecessary risks. We can't trust these guys.
Yes.
And it just doesn't ring true. It's like, but the content is almost neutral. It could go either way.
Well, I don't know if I think it's neutral. I think that him giving an impassioned speech from the other position that we shouldn't trust them, we shouldn't take this risk, that's what I would expect Kirk to do.
Yeah.
But it doesn't work as well.
Well, yeah, it doesn't work for the story. Sure.
Risk is not our business.
Look, risk is not part of the game. You want to sit in that chair.
Well, he could say risk is our business, but this is an unacceptable level of risk.
Did you guys ever see that movie from
the
90s?
Risk is our business, and business hours are closed.
And he drops the mic and he walks out of the conference room. I think that Mulhall decided that she wanted to do this because she saw it as a way to make out with Captain Kirk.
See, now that's where there should have been a slight discussion, a line or two, because, you know, when Zargon and not Pulaski.
Are you, you keep calling him Zargon? Is this Toy Story or what?
It's better than Zardoz.
But like he
Sargon.
Yeah. When Sargon and his wife, like, it's like when that's introduced, like it's going to be a male and female. So the implication is when we take over their bodies, you know, and if they didn't get it the first time, then like after the second, you know, jump back into the body, you realize what's going to happen when they're going to possess you. There should have been like a, are you okay with this, Lieutenant? Because obviously we're going to be making out a lot.
But they wouldn't have known that.
Though, Zachary, that's the Meta Trek episode I want. Is that considered cheating when you're not in your own body?
Well, only if it's with a 600,000-year-old being, you know. You can get away with anything.
Wow.
See, but I got the impression that Kirk and them didn't know what was happening to their bodies when they weren't in their bodies. That's how I interpret it.
Yeah, myself.
I was going to say Kirk likes older women, but, you know.
Okay, so that's a good point, Bishay, because there's a point where when they're down in the chamber and Sargon possesses Kirk's body and then Kirk comes back into his body, Kirk says that he was floating in time and space while Sargon had control of his body. And to me, that implies that Sargon actually sent Kirk's spirit somewhere else during that time, in which case it would be true that they don't know what's happening to their bodies while they're being possessed.
I don't know that that's exactly where he sent him. I got the impression that that's the only way that he can comprehend what happened to him by being transferred into this Horta egg, right? Like, they don't know what's going on. So let me try and put this in a random thought here. So they don't understand what's happened to their mind. So the closest comparison that he can say is I'm floating in time and space because that's what it felt like. But being in that receptacle, they don't have any idea because they don't have the mental powers to understand what's going on outside of this sphere.
And no sensory apparatus, right? They don't have hands and eyes, and you know, they there's no
right.
There's
Sargon and them have all these telepathic powers that they can call spaceships from far away, but Kirk and them don't, so they're not going to know at all what's going on outside.
But even if they go into the egg ball, whatever it is, they are not in their body. So it's not like the case often in Star Trek you see where someone is possessed by an alien and there's a struggle inside the body between the alien and the person themselves, like a struggle for control of the body. But in this case, it is almost like, I'm going to take you out of the body. I'm going to put myself in there. It's like, it's just a container at that point. And therefore, as you guys were saying, they don't really know what's happening to their bodies.
Would it have helped you, Chris, if that when Sargon was in the body, Kirk had a scar right there, and then when he right. was out of the body?
Then you would know, yeah, exactly.
But see, Chris, I really struggled with this point, because I think the way this is usually done with the internal struggle of two consciousnesses in one body, that's just the way it's always done. So I would think I was reading a lot of that into this episode that wasn't really there.
That wasn't there, right?
Yeah, I think that's right.
And then also they added, which is fine, because at the heart of this episode, to me, and, you know, we're like, I think one of y'all said already, like, you know, it's not the greatest episode, but it's not bad either. But like, I keep watching going like, you know, this is a solid sci-fi concept and I'm on board with this. You know, it may not be a breakout episode, but like, this is a solid foundation sci-fi concept and story. But like, there's undefined powers for these beings. So like, you have evil Spock and just like, you know, Jedi mind trick, Nurse Chapel, like, oh, I believe you were saying how cool I was. That's really what we were talking about. And then you have sort of Sargon, like, I have so many tricks up my sleeve. I'm really alive. Mwah, mwah, mwah. I'm like, oh, I mean, okay. That's fine. That's fine. But, like, you know, give me some sort of at least context, a little bit.
I felt with Kirk, one possible explanation for why he bought into the plan so easily and gave the inspirational speech is that there could be some residual effect of Sargon having taking control of his body down in the chambers. So it wasn't 100% Kirk here. It was, he was being influenced by, let's put it into Guinan terms, an echo of the being that had been there.
But it's such a classic speech from him too, that it's like, I've never thought of it in this perspective to try and think that this might not have been Kirk, because in a nutshell, what he's saying in this speech is everything that they are supposed to be doing as Starfleet officers. Risk is our business. We are out here putting our lines on the line every day for, you know, for every possible whatever reason. And so I've always taken it as that at face value, and that's why he's saying it and whatnot. So to try and think that maybe it's out of context feels a little weird right now, you know?
Well, now when you say in a nutshell, I assume you mean a walnut.
A walnut.
Nutshell.
A walnut size nutshell.
Because that is how, that's how, that's what got Scotty on board. A walnut, you say? I'm on board now.
This is nonsense, but I'll take a look at some specs.
Some diagrams, yeah. Technical diagrams.
Okay, well, let's talk about a mechanical life and the whole idea of Sargon's plan, which is that he, his wife, Thalesa, and her wannabe lover boy, Henoch, which is something else. Did you guys really get this from the episode? That Henoch, according to the old compendium, the old original series compendium book, Henoch had for a long time wanted to be part of this like love triangle between Sargon, Thalesa, and himself.
He's a
but
swinger?
He never was able to make it happen. And so a part of his plan, like he is apparently in love with Thalesa. And part of his reason for wanting to kill Sargon apparently is not simply so that he can keep the organic body, but it would also allow him to get closer to Thalesa or have a shot at Thalesa. I didn't get that from watching the episode. Did I just completely miss something?
I totally picked up on that in the episode. Really?
Did you?
Yeah, I think there's a scene. I'm trying to remember the scene, but there's a scene when Sargon and Thalesa first kind of interact as in as embodied beings again for the first time in 600,000 years. And what's his name? Evil Spock.
Henoch.
Henoch, yeah. is watching this, and he looks jealous to me. I totally pick up on that.
Now, Philip has been raising his hand the entire time.
No,
I was speaking and you were speaking. So what is it, Philip?
No, I just wanted to touch everyone. For the first time, I was reaching out.
Thanks, Philip. I've been waiting for that.
Before we get too stuck into these metal bodies. And,
why are there smudges all over your camera lens now?
Oh, well, I'm sorry. I'm just going to save it. Because
tell me, Philip, can robot hands do this?
Right.
Well, I don't know, Chris. You're in Japan.
No, that's
you
one of the
me.
Out of context quotes I did not tweet was, can robot lips do this?
Well, if anyone knows the answer to that question, it's Captain Kirk. He's kissed enough androids, right? Let's be honest.
Oh, yeah. That was my favorite part.
That's
that
true.
That
he
I
would
love.
Know.
I just love the retrospect Trek. I mean, like for me and for a lot of fans who are like 24th century fans or maybe newer fans, you know, it's like, oh, Data's one of a kind and da da da, and like in TOS we're like meeting gods,
it's like
every day
everywhere.
It's like, oh, you need to build an android body, no problem, we do that all the time, building android bodies.
Just put some putty on a table and spin it around really fast.
Moldy putty.
Yeah.
I did not get that at all, though, like that there was a love triangle there in the slightest.
Huh.
I will say the relationship to me seemed odd because I'd forgotten, like I remembered, okay, I think they were husband and wife. I forget who the third guy was. So then when it's like, oh, the only people that survived were the two leaders and the one guy's wife. And I'm like, so evil Spock, right? You know, I guess we get this, right? That they were opposite ends of the war, right? Like the two leaders or the two generals.
Yeah, Sargon and Henoch were on opposite sides of the conflict.
Yeah. Right. Zargon and Evil Spock. I believe I said that already, Chris. No, I'm kidding. The way that Evil Spock talks with the woman, like he's really friendly for someone who was like trying to kill her, I guess. Like, and I don't know if we just bonded over light balls over the past million years, but it's just very familiar of like, you know, you don't want to be in that metal body. She's like, oh, no, you're so right. I'm like, really? They seem very friendly. Were they like brother and sister or something, or cousins maybe? I don't know.
Well, they were right next to each other in that chamber.
Yeah.
Right? And there was only the two of them.
If you spend, you know, thousands of centuries next to each other in a chamber, you're probably going to get to know each other pretty well.
Is it like a really uncomfortable flight that just lasts for millions of years?
Yeah.
I think they'd bicker a little bit, though. Like, hey, you know, hey, clean up your orb over there.
Zachary, as you say, probably if you watch and you pay attention, you'll pick up on that cue. You know, I can understand picking up on that cue. What's odd is that if that's supposed to be part of the story that influences the actions of Hinnok as a character, I think it's yet another example of the writing in this story sort of taking it for granted that the viewer understands what's going on, because it's really not made clear at any point. I just took it that Hinnok wanted to kill Sargon so that he could keep Spock's body, because Sargon would not let him keep the body.
Yeah, I think for me, it just boils down to a couple of nonverbal, glances or looks, you know, things you really have to read a lot into it. It's there if you look for it, but if there's no dialogue associated with it.
Yeah.
But I do love how the evil Spock character choice, it's like, okay, you know, Nimoy, it's going to be a really different character. I just want you to think of something that's really going to ground this character. He's like, hanging out skeezily in doorways. All right, that's a good choice. Do that in every scene.
Yeah, he leans at like a 45-degree angle, you know?
He does, yeah.
It's just sliding.
With the kind of creepy grin the whole time, too.
There's one great line in here that we haven't mentioned yet. I don't know if you were planning on mentioning it or not, but it's in that scene where that Zach's talking about here, when Spock leans forward and the camera zooms in on whatnot, and he's like, I seem to have got the best body here. It's got the best vision and the best hearing and whatnot. I'm surprised the Vulcans never conquered your people. And McCoy's like, oh, that's because they're peaceful. He's like, yes, 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 as are we all. And he's like, I love that line. I think it's great.
Yeah.
And like nobody turns to look at him and be like,
I'm just being super Kaz about it, guys. We're all peaceful here, right? High fives? No?
Pinky swear.
I'll be in the other room.
You're right about that line, because what I hear after he says it is like, of course we're all peaceful.
Yeah. We're all
peaceful.
Don't sweat it.
Don't even worry about it.
Such a great line.
Yeah.
I also like that in the 5 seconds he was in the body, he looked up every profile of humans and Vulcans, compared them, knew that Vulcans were more superior than humans, and then said, oh, by the way, I'm in the best one. I'm like, what were you comparing it to? How did you know?
But I feel like they kind of just read that out of their consciousnesses. They seem to be able to reach into their thoughts, communicate.
That's probably the
case, they just had like a whole total mental download from the whole crew or something.
Though, and I know I don't want to get it off topic, but I think Sargon is a bit of a fanfic writer, because in the beginning he's like, I want these people on my landing party. I want these people to be taken over. I want, you know, this, and like, I'm like, he's just really concentrating about the character choices he wants. Cause we actually have, for the only time in TOS that I know, a very TNG, and I know Chris likes it when I drop this one during the Ready Room, reminds me of TNG. We have a Riker Picard moment of where you had the little cute Spock Kirk, like, oh, what? Oh, you go for, oh, of like, you know, Kirk saying, like, you know what? It's been a season and a half, Spock. I've thought about it. Probably not a good idea that we go down every time together. I mean, I think it's just hit me.
Right.
48 episodes in.
I know we've gone down every single time together already, but this time, no.
Do we ever find out why Pulaski, for lack of a better term, is chosen instead of any other crew member? Why her? She looks good in red. She's the lady in red, but what?
Kyle Riker has been talking.
Word is out.
To be honest.
She's got a reputation.
So here's a problem with diversity on the crew, right? The story calls for Sargon and his wife to come back and take over the bodies so that they can interact. Well, you have to have a female crew member. So what are your choices? You've got Uhura, you've got Nurse Chapel at this point, or you've got like some random character that we've never seen before. So you have to bring out somebody.
Why not Uhura?
And they weren't ready for the kiss. I mean, this is no Plato's stepchildren.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, too, and it sounds terrible to
yes,
say today.
Yes, Brandon, this is no Plato's stepchildren. I agree with that.
But that's the thing, and it sounds terrible to say today, but in 1968, when this is written, they weren't going to have Uhura go down, because it would have then meant that Kirk and Uhura would have had to kiss for this story, and the censors weren't going to let that happen. So then who do you have? I mean, you've got Nurse Chapel. But,
and Dr. Mulholland Drive.
But, you know, Nurse Chapel's already got her other role to play in this episode, so you've got to roll out a female character that we've never seen before.
And I do have to throw out, to me, and again, I haven't watched TOS in a while, but to me, this was a very sexy episode. I mean, like, really, to me, because there's a lot of talk about the physicality.
Planting your seed.
Well, yeah, but just like with Sargon and Pulaski, about, like, it was very, like, it's not subtle. It's like, hey, we're man and wife. We haven't seen each other in a while. Hey, let's, you know, we enjoy touching. We enjoy kissing. I mean, they're just very, like, upfront about it, you know. And to me, this was very, like, out there. I mean, I know it's, you know, quote unquote stereotypical of the 60s and all that stuff. But I was like, this is, you know.
I was kind of wondering that final scene when they just want 5 more minutes together. Why don't they ask for an hour or something, you know, make it worth their time.
And I don't want to get into this.
It's been
this.
A long time, Zachary.
Come back to my quarter.
It's been thousands of centuries, so they don't need an hour right now.
Oh. Is that a practice? Yeah.
But, and I don't want to cut into the Brandon section too early, but like the love music was on 11 in this episode, and that's not a complaint, but that was like, it was half this episode was like the love TOS 11, music. Huh? Mm-hmm.
I want to go back to something you just said there about Chapel having her. You're like, and Chapel had her role to play in this episode. Okay. Did nobody question that she was like out of it? Like, she's like, McCoy's just like, did you want to say something? You should probably go give some medicine to somebody now. It's like, yeah.
She had a rough night the night before.
And then she's like, and then McCoy's like, are you tired? She's like, no, I'm fine. It's all good. She's just like snaps out of it, like just like that.
All right. So there are some points there that I also want to cover, but let's try. Like, we've been doing such a great job so far following our outline. Let's try to stick a little bit closer to the topic here, just because I wanted to ask you guys this whole debate about whether they're going to go into the mechanical body or they're not. And Sargon thinks it's a great idea because they're then going to be able to live amongst the people and help others not make the same mistakes that the people of Eret made so that they won't destroy themselves. So Sargon has this idea that he's going to go out and try to make the galaxy a better place. Hennock just wants to experience living in the flesh again. And Thalesa is on Sargon's side for a while. Then she sees the android body that Hennock has made, and it's a male body, and she doesn't want to live inside the male body. And that's a whole other thing that I don't want to get into today just because we don't have time. But I think it would be a very interesting topic for Matrix, actually. But she changes her mind, and then she changes her mind again when she realizes that she can hurt people with her powers. When she gets upset at Dr. McCoy, and then she sees him suffering as he's surrounded by glowy lights that came from her.
More undefined powers.
Yeah, this whole back and forth here. I mean, what are your thoughts on living for essentially forever? You have near immortality as a machine versus having a limited lifespan, but living in an organic body. So it's the debate between Sargon and Hennock here.
I'm kind of a sensualist, so I'm kind of with evil Spock on this one. I think I'd take a limited existence in the flesh any day over an immortal disembodied kind of existence. But I think Star Trek has this kind of mixed relationship with these beings that live forever. On the one hand, there's several instances of alien races that have these long lifespans, whether they're members of the Q continuum, whether they're these aliens, they end up being corrupt in some way. This longevity, yeah, you know, leads to some sort of internal moral corruption. On the other hand, you know, Star Trek seems committed to this idea that we can solve these constraints of human existence. We can increase our lifespan through better medical technology. It's progressive in a lot of ways. So by removing those constraints, like the fear of death, you know, that puts this immediacy in our lives, you know, forces us to make these hard choices about how we spend our time and what kind of lives we're going to live. It sort of frees us up to be the best versions of ourselves, allows humankind to flourish in a way. So
knowing that you have a limited existence.
I guess my question is, which is it? You know, does an immortal life in Star Trek mean you end up, you know, corrupt like these aliens here or like a member of the Q continuum? Or does that free us up to be the best versions of that we could be of the human race?
So you're saying that knowing that you have a limited existence drives you to be a better person and accomplish more. Knowing that you have forever, you just kind of become lazy or you become corrupt.
I think that's it. It's kind of a paradox because on the one hand, the closer you get, you know, we only have a certain number of years, you know, 80 or 100 years or whatnot. And, you know, the closer you get to that, the fewer possibilities you have. And so it forces you to make these really hard choices about what's important to you and how you're going to spend your time and what you want to get out of life, what you want to contribute to the world. And yet the paradox, I think, is that at any given moment you can go, I'm going to do something totally different. I'm going to go way out in left field. I'm going to make a different choice, get a different job, whatever the hard choice is. It's this paradox of immediate choice in the moment. And yet, you know, we only have this finite amount of time. And if you remove that factor, you know, what is the motivating drive for mankind if you don't have that that fear of death or this sense of death as a constraint forcing you to make the most of the time you have?
And someone once told me that time was a predator that stalked us all our lives, Zachary. But, you know, I think of time as a companion that goes with us on the journey and reminds us to cherish every moment. And I think that's really how I agree with you, too.
So you're planning to live forever, Philip.
Yeah. Yeah. And I agree. It's you know, like I said, Star Trek does this topic many times. I have this running thing about TNG. It's like, right, these 35 or 28-year-old writers just love talking about age and growing older every single episode here. But yeah, I mean, I think it's a story Star Trek does a lot in a good way. But yeah, the life as a machine or short life as a human flesh. So in some ways, maybe that gives evil Spock, you know, you can relate. You know, what's his choice? Light ball, metal mannequin, or, you know, being evil Spock. I mean, given those
light
three choices.
Light ball or metal mannequin. There's a choice for you.
he can go be worshipped on, he can go to Bajor and be worshipped as the orb of consciousness.
That's true. This orb is much larger than the others.
Right. Wait, is that like a school, like Bajoran children? Which of these orbs does not belong?
Right. One of these orbs is not like the other.
Though I was thinking as I was watching this episode about the whole, you know, the metal bodies, like, this isn't exactly the body snatchers as much as the body borrowers. Like, you know, we're trying to be really nice about it. And then I also love you were talking about, you know, Zargon, because there's also a competing, like, the idealism of Zargon versus the practicality of evil Spock. And Sargon has this very idealistic, like, yeah, we should be in bodies and spread our message about how bad we were. And Sargon's like, yeah, so anyway, I just want to live a life, man.
I'm just picturing these three androids in a ship flying from planet to planet, and they land and they get out and they just tell everybody, you know, we were really bad. Like 6,000 centuries ago, we did bad stuff and we're sorry. And then they take off for another planet. They do the same thing.
The apology tour.
Don't you do the bad things we did.
It sounds like an alien abduction plot or something. You know, something like, you know, that someone's abducted and the aliens, you know, the gray aliens around them are telling them, oh, there's, you know, there's danger on your planet. You know, don't get into a nuclear war. All these warnings. And then they go back. And it just sounds like a straight out of the, you know, just sort of bad sci-fi alien abduction. Yeah. Something out of the X-Files. Yeah.
Though I also love the... I don't know if passive aggressive is the word I would use, like between Kirk and Sargon, and Kirk's like, well, you know, we had our nuclear war and we were fine afterwards. I don't know what y'all's problem was.
And then Sargon's like, oh, we survived too. We were okay. It wasn't that. It was, we later decided we were gods. That's what screwed us over.
Yeah, we have magical powers. You got magical powers? I'm just saying, man.
And then Kirk's like, I'm out. Throws his cards down on the table.
But he's got the best body of all, so he wins. Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about Sargon and his people a little bit more, and the fact that they imply in this episode that they are the parent race. And you know, Philip, the TNG episode that this reminds me of is The Chase, and the fact that the writers give us some explanation as to why there are similarities amongst all the different races that we see in the galaxy. It's not stated as explicitly here as it is in The Chase, but Sargon implies that they went around, they planted their seed on many, many worlds.
He does mention that, yes.
He does mention that many times. And that, you know, he calls...
That's why he chose Kirk's body.
I want to know what that means exactly.
Well, Zachary,
what was the method that you used?
When we get off mic, Zachary, I'll explain later.
It's like, where do humans, it's like this, like, you know, kids book. Where do humans come from?
Yeah. Well, let's put it this way. In The Chase, I get the impression that they flew over planets and ships and they just kind of dropped genetic, like, material into the oceans.
Sprinkling amino acids
shaker,
or something.
They were just like,
yeah. But here, it just sounds more like they were more hands-on in their
this
approach.
This is
well,
the
evil Spock was, for sure. Yeah.
Well, you know, to me, And again, this isn't a criticism at all of TOS, but like TOS does this specific part a lot, which is fine, because you could say like, well, it's inconsistent, but it's also saying like, well, there's a lot of theories. So like you have who mourns for Adonis, right? You have the Apollo aliens visited. Now, I know that's not saying origin of the species, I know. But it's,
well,
you
that's
know,
like the ancient astronauts
right.
theory,
but then
which
you
is
have
kind of popular today.
The Paradise Syndrome, where the preservers, and I can't remember this before or after, but then that would be the same thing as what Sargon is saying. So is it the preservers, or is it Sargon seed just all over the universe? You know, and so, but I like that you know, that's, you could say it's inconsistent, or you just say like, hey, people were just doing a bunch of things, and something happened, and that's how things happen.
That all you guys came up somehow.
Look, I'm just saying there's a galactic sperm bank, and someone's the father. That's all I know. Sargon,
there's a show title right
you
there.
Are not the father of the human race.
Yeah.
Oh, man. All right.
Well, you know, there's an actual name for this theory, panspermia, and that I just can't say that without laughing now.
But it is a real theory. So.
It is a real theory. Yeah. But it kind of just pushes the problem back. And it's like a theory to try to explain the origin of life, but it doesn't really explain it. It just pushes the problem back, right? You say, well, okay, well, we were seeded in some way by, you know, amino acids, or maybe some, you know, ancient aliens came down, but where did they come from? And where did they come from? It's not really an answer to the question.
You know, we were talking on the other side of the room.
The other side of the room.
About how they managed to slip the whole thing about Adam and Eve by the censors when Sargon mentions that maybe your Adam and Eve were some of our explorers or some of our people. Well, the way they got that by the censors was that they added the line that Mulhall has, where she says that our theories are that life on our planet developed independently.
Well, like, to me, it's actually the reverse. I'm surprised they got that part in. Because this is basically, you know, and I don't think, I mean, and you know, not to get whatever, but I don't think in the U.S. creationism versus evolution was a huge thing in the 60s. It was sort of more of like early 1900s and then like late 80s, 90s. Yeah. And so it wasn't really like that wasn't much of a social issue during this airing. But it was interesting that they did throw both of them in there. So it was interesting.
Well, I think it's fascinating how much, you know, God and the Bible and stuff comes up in the original series on this rewatch. I mean, like some of the lines that came out, you mentioned who mourns for
Adonais.
I mean, even in there, they're like, we don't need the gods. The one's sufficient, you know, yeah. Like Kirk says that in that episode. And in this one here for them to say, you know, okay, so maybe our Adam and Eve are our seed. And, you know, like to simply even acknowledge a story that was in the Bible, right, is pretty amazing, I think. You know, like I don't think it's that it's as amazing that they're saying maybe Adam and Eve were an alien. I think it's just amazing that they're acknowledging the Bible at all.
I don't
considering
know.
That
I don't know if I agree that it's amazing. I think that it's a symptom of the tug of war between Gene Roddenberry's vision and the vision of the censors and the writers. And I think that a lot of lines keep getting inserted by one party or the other. And maybe they see it as a way of kind of balancing it out. It's like, okay, well, we'll acknowledge biblical stories as a counter to the mention of something like oblivion, which we're going to talk about here before we wrap up today. It's sort of this balancing act. Like, I want to get these ideas out to the public, but the censors won't let me. So what kind of concessions do I have to make in order to get it in? And with it being an American television show written in the 1960s, it's not really surprising to me that a lot of biblical language and ideas would make it into the show.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's surprising. I don't know if this is what you meant, Brandon. I think it's surprising it's in Gene's show.
That's probably what you mean.
I don't
think
the networks were putting in Bible references. So it's like it's either the writers and Gene just being like, okay, fine, you get one line.
Well, I'm glad we're talking about this because there's a tension to me. It's a real question I have. If for a show like Star Trek that's so technologically and socially progressive, why are these themes of eternal life and disembodied consciousness and mind-body dualism, why do those kinds of metaphysical slash spiritual slash religious themes keep coming up when the show is otherwise basically a technologically progressive, social progressive show?
But I think it's because it's what society expected at the time. Like, if you get too progressive, I'm not sure that the audience, enough of the audience, would tune in for that week after week.
Have you seen The Twilight Zone?
Well, see, that's the other thing, that there was a Twilight Zone episode like 4 years before this about Adam and Eve being ancient astronauts. And it aired, and that was fine. So the fact that the censors had a problem with Adam and Eve in this story, and they had to insert that line, is kind of surprising. But again, I guess it depends on, you know, which censors you're dealing with.
It doesn't take much to tease people with another way to look at things. Like, you know, there are people that just take their worldview and their assumptions and their sort of their own origin story kind of for granted. And this is a great example, I think, of Star Trek coming along and saying, look, there's other possibilities here. You know, we were seeded, or Adam and Eve were descendants of this other race. And it doesn't take much just to kind of get those ideas out there and then quickly move on, get back to the story. But the ideas are out there. You can change the world through ideas.
And to me, both good and bad. The good of Star Trek is that it does do these things a lot about moving consciousness and body switching and personality switching and blah, 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 blah. What I think it does bad is, and you know, I'm not asking for serialization, but like, I feel like you should be affected by the fact that you were a ball of light. Like, I mean, and again, not to like call to something else, but like there was an episode of The Next Generation. I think it was a season two episode. I can't really remember, season one or season two, where Picard basically is a ball of light for like a good 10 minutes just floating out there in space, and they like beam him back. And I'm like, I feel like that should come up again, that you were ball of light for like a good 10 minutes. Like, and in this one with Kirk, Spock and Pulaski, like you were in a, like a big light ball. How was that?
Second picture Kirk saying, you know, remember back in the day, back when I was a ball of light, back when I shared consciousness with this infinitely intelligent being, everyone's like, okay, Kirk, we're tired of hearing it. Yeah, we get it already.
Yeah, I know. It will become this thing, like every conversation starts, well, when I was a ball of light.
Okay, fine. When I met Apollo, oh, not that one.
Yeah, get over yourself, Kirk. Yeah.
Just randomly, because we brought this up, I have to point out, this is one of the... not the only one. This is one of the few episodes we actually literally see Kirk doing a log entry. Like, he's literally like pressing the button and talking and sending it. And to me, we've done this joke on Earl Grey, but I do have to realize it's very like, if you listen to that first log entry, it's very poetic. I have to figure out like the Yeoman Smith back at Starfleet headquarters who's getting this log going, like, get to the point, man. What are you doing? Just okay. All I needed was date, star date. Where are your coordinates and the mission, man? I don't know the poetic life of finding a distress signal, and sheesh, man, this guy.
Philip, didn't you guys do an episode on Earl Grey once about someone at Starfleet reading all of Picard's captain's logs?
Yes. I mean, I was just thinking about the poor Yeoman Schmed Lab here in the 23rd century. He's getting all of Kirk's, like, this is very weird.
All right. Well, okay, let's move on, because we're getting close to an hour and we still have several things we want to touch on here. One of them is Katra's and a scheming Sargon, and we talked about how the plot elements of the story just don't add up. Too much stuff for me kind of comes out of the blue. In the writer's mind, all this stuff is going on, but it's not actually in the script and it's not actually on the screen. And when there's that scene in sickbay that I talked about where Sargon releases Kirk's body and then Bones is talking to Kirk, and you're not quite clear what's happened at that point. And then we find out that, well, Kirk was standing too far away from the base station, and so Sargon's data couldn't get transmitted back over to the receptacle, and Sargon's dead. But is Kirk dead? Well, no, Kirk's not dead, as it turns out, but we still think Sargon is dead. And then suddenly, when Thalesa decides that she's not going to go inside that android body, suddenly here's Sargon talking again. And then we find out that apparently Sargon has been living in the fabric of the ship, whatever that means, and he's been plotting this whole scheme to convince Chapel and Bones that the injection will be lethal, so that Hinnok will think it'll be lethal because he can read Spock's mind. And it's like this whole big plan going on. And then Spock's Katra has been put inside Nurse Chapel, which we don't know until she tells us at the end of the episode, oh yeah, I've been carrying Spock around in my head all this time.
It's a great surprise ending.
Now, when we think about the Katra and we think about Spock, we always think about the search for Spock. And we think that Bones was the time that someone carried Spock's Katra around, but actually here in the original series, Nurse Chapel carried Spock's Katra in this episode.
Nurse Chapel, what in the devil?
I love the way she kind of bats her eyes at Spock at the end. Like, we shared consciousness, Spock. She bats her eyes at him.
Yeah.
And then she slowly lights a cigarette and takes a drag.
And then the censors are like, I'm not sure we can have her smoking on the show.
But she wasn't pulling on her boots.
Chris, the only question I have is, how many times did you watch this episode to be able to keep all of that straight? I couldn't do that.
Well, you know, watching it again, I vaguely remember it, but watching it, I'm like, there's a very short mourning period for everyone involved in this episode. So first of all, when Sargon dies, I expected Pulaski to shed a tear or two. Now I'm just like, well, that happened. Okay, well, I guess I'm going on the metal body now. And then, like, Spock's light bulb gets destroyed. It's like, well, I guess Spock's dead. So anyway. Right.
But it was worth it, yeah. Right.
And then later, Kirk's like, we've got to track down Spock and kill him, right? At least that thing living inside him.
There's a lot of weird things in that scene, too. Like, when Sargon comes back, you know, like, so Dr. Pulaski there is like, okay, Dr. McCoy, I will save your captain as long as you don't tell anybody that I'm going to keep this body, because then nobody would know. And it's like, yes, we would know,
right?
Because of your booming, echoing voice.
Right.
So then when she's like, fires him with those purple fires that come out of nowhere. And then she's like, wait a minute, I can't do this. And Sargon's like, yeah, that's right.
I'm glad you came to your senses, my wife.
Yeah. So was he like just testing her or something? I don't know.
Yeah, because it does seem, well, maybe they can't control each other. Because you would think, well, maybe Sargon could control Thalesa and not let her do that. Or he could control her and make her do that in order to prove his point. But maybe they can't control each other. They can only control weaker minds like humans.
If only this episode ended where maybe it was like sort of like black and white and the two of them were struggling together at the end. Oh, wait, alternative factor. That's the one we're not doing.
I think the fact that as we discuss these things, we have to keep saying maybe, 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 maybe drives home the point that the pieces of this episode just don't fit together.
Also, I feel like this is an easy target, and I hate to go there, but are we going to give the excuse of Sargon's possession for Shatner's acting in this episode? Because he's in full Shatner. I don't know if Schindler has like a Shatner factor that he spectrum or continuum that he uses, but we're at about like 15 on the scale of 10. It's not distracting, but I'm like, okay. I mean, I get it, Bill. I get it.
I think it's awesome.
I'm with you. I think it's awesome, too, because you can see the stage acting background. You can totally turn the sound all the way down. Sorry, Brandon. Turn the music down. And you can still understand everything that's going on based on Kirk's sort of miming of the situation.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, this is who Captain Kirk is. You know, like watching it again, this whole rewatch, this is who Captain Kirk is. The way that he talks, the way that he moves, this is him in all of his Shatner glory.
And I would point out on that point, you know, and I feel like we always try to do this on the network, put this straight, you know, the whole Kirk, like, oh, he's just like ladies man all the time. He is very shy about the fact that they were just kissing. It's not like, hey, I guess we were just kissing. Cool. High five. He's like, oh, like at the very end of the episode is what I'm talking about. They're like, oh, okay. Well, nice to meet you, Lieutenant Commander. I'm sure we won't see you again. You'll be reassigned after this.
Right. Or you might even go into the Witness Protection Program and change your name to Miranda Jones.
Also, I'm going to ask this question, and y'all can tell me if I'm wrong. Is this the highest ranked woman we ever see? Because I noticed she's not lieutenant. She's lieutenant commander.
I don't know off the top of my head on that one. I'd have to go back and really think about the characters that we've seen in TOS. You're talking about in TOS, of course.
Yeah. Because I don't know if we ever saw a commander or a captain.
Well, let's touch on one last thing here, and this is this idea of oblivion. I call it oblivion together. And as they're kissing, as we were just talking about the end, Sargon and Thalesia are agreeing that instead of going into mechanical bodies, they're going to depart into oblivion, where they will be together. And Thalesia tells Sargon, promise me that we'll be together. Now, my first question is, so oblivion is this state of unawareness or extinction. That's what the word means. So how can you be together just kind of out there in nothingness that stretches forever in a state where you are unaware of anything? That's my first question.
It's kind of a strange idea. I mean, it's like, it's not that they're, it seems to imply that it's not that they're totally destroyed. Like they still exist in some sense. They're just not conscious, almost like they're asleep. In my mind, I kind of envision this, the state of our consciousness when we're asleep. In some sense, we haven't ceased to exist. We haven't gone away. We're just not conscious and we're still there. So is this like some sort of eternal soul sleep, for lack of a better word?
Well, for me, it'd be like eternal editing, because when I'm asleep, my brain is still like editing documents and things and I want it to stop. So
what if they were all wrong and they're like, yeah, we're going to go into this oblivion, and they have this idea of what they think it is and they just die?
What if they all become characters in the video game Oblivion?
I mean, it's a terribly, terribly romantic idea. It's like an old couple laying down to die together or something. Yeah. You know, they're going to spend eternity together. They don't know whether that's really going to be true, but it's this really romantic scene.
Are they the old couple in Titanic holding hands on the bed?
Yes, that's what I was thinking of too. Yeah. But so I can see how that could be comforting for humans, right? Like the old couple in Titanic, that it's just the idea. That's what you believe is going to happen. We don't know what happens after you die, but you believe it. Maybe it's comforting. But in the case here of Sargon and Thalesa, like they've been disembodied for millennia and they have all these godlike powers. So they have to have more knowledge about existence than we have. So what does it mean to them, Oblivion?
It just seems like an odd word choice to me, because I can't think of any way in which Oblivion is like, cool, let's do that. let's sign up for that one. I'm like, hey, can we build another light ball maybe? Or like beam them down to like a planet and maybe they like become one with the planet, or, you know, like just like...
Oh, you could build. This is what you do, Philip. You build, it's like Spaceship Earth at Epcot Center. You build this like giant ball on a planet and just beam them both into the one ball.
Which is very sexy.
Yes.
You guys are forgetting the real question on this, though, is that, you know, so they're like, okay, before we go into Oblivion, we're going to go into their bodies for 5 more minutes and kiss and whatnot.
Or an
hour. Did Kirk and Pulaski's minds go when that happened? There was no ball for them to go into.
There is no base station on the bridge. So, yeah, where did they
go? Where did they go?
Maybe they're like in the corner of the mind trying to look away, like,
One was in Spock's scanner. The other one was, where were they sitting? I don't know.
And one was in Bones' tricorder.
That's right.
So, yeah.
It sounds like something out of The Princess Bride, though. Like, you keep using that word, Oblivion, but I don't think it means what you think it means.
You know, now, if this was called Return to Oblivion, I would get that title.
Yes, okay. Return to Oblivion.
Wait, sing it first, would you?
Okay.
I had a song in my mind. I was thinking, like, what's that song, like, by Olivia Newton-John, Physical?
Oh, yeah.
We're going to go Oblivion! We're going to go.
Let's go to Oblivion. Oh man,
something I was thinking Xanadu
might work better there, because that's actually an imaginary place. But
where's Matt Rushing when you need him to sing?
Okay, so my second question here, and Zachary, I'm curious if you can shed some light on this. The original writer of this script, the writer of the original script, I guess is a better way to phrase that, John T. Dugan, he was very unhappy that Roddenberry inserted this idea of Oblivion into the story, because Dugan is a devout Catholic and he cannot stand for something like Oblivion in the afterlife. Now, I'm not Catholic. I'm actually not religious, but I know that in Catholicism, there's the belief that you either go to heaven, hell, or purgatory. So there are three states, and you're aware of where you are, as I understand it. So I guess that's where he has a problem with this idea that if Oblivion is a state of unawareness, that can't work for him, right? Because you either, depending on your life, go to heaven, hell, or purgatory. But in broader terms, just of Earth religions, as we were talking about the old couple in Titanic laying down and believing that they're going to be together in the afterlife, I think in more general terms with Earth religions, there's this idea that there's this something beyond death that just stretches on forever, and that there's some essence in our being that lives on after the physical body dies. And I think that the Catholic view is very specific, more so than what people in general think about the afterlife. So is this idea of oblivion really that different than what we think about a potential afterlife?
I'm glad you thought to mention bring up this Catholic element inside this story, because this is something that I think different Christian denominations deal with in very different ways. You know, I think most Christian denominations have this sense that there's an afterlife. You have a soul and it's going to live on after death. And at some point, and then if you kind of write in the rest of Christian eschatology into the story, like, you know, if you think Christ is coming back and is going to resurrect the dead and there's a heaven and a hell, all this metaphysical stuff, you have to kind of ask yourself, how does it all fit together? So different Christian denominations kind of emphasize different things. Some denominations think your soul goes right to heaven. Some denominations think you have this thing. We use the term soul sleep. That's actually a real term that some denominations use, that your soul is kind of asleep until the final judgment and Christ comes back and you're resurrected and then you're conscious again. And it's not clear at all. You know, I don't think you can put a blanket description of say Christians in general all think this about the afterlife. The different denominations disagree amongst each other a little bit. And I can see the tension here a bit. You know, if you simultaneously think that there is an afterlife, you're not destroyed. Yes, I don't think any Christian denomination likes the term oblivion. I think, again, I just think it's a poor word choice. I feel like in this script that word is causing a lot of the issue. It clearly caused an issue for the individual you mentioned.
But it has a negative connotation, I think.
It does, absolutely. But then the question is, okay, after you die, then what? Are you conscious or are you not conscious? And if you're not conscious, but you're going to be conscious again eventually, what the heck happens to your soul? Is that this kind of oblivion state where you're not destroyed, but you're not conscious either? That's kind of what I read when I hear this oblivion state. You know, they still exist, but it's not a really robust state of consciousness. That's the best I've got at it.
Yeah. And even beyond Christianity, I mean, other religions, Islam, Buddhism, they all have, and Buddhism, I guess, is a religion, but it's quite different from the others in terms of what you're worshiping or what you're not. But anyway, they all have this idea that you live on, right? Like this one life isn't all that there is, that there's something else beyond there. So it's not even just a Christian issue. It's just how the human mind works in thinking about what happens beyond the death of the physical body.
I mean, isn't this really, Chris, about the great beyond?
Yes, it is, Philip.
You know, I mean, in general, I don't know if I can answer this question, but does Star Trek really kind of take a stand on this in any way, shape, or form? You know, do characters in Star Trek themselves have this sense of an afterlife? Are they comfortable with that idea, or do they tend to fall into the nope, when you're dead, and that's the end of it? And all of this afterlife stuff, is that spooky, superstitious metaphysics that we've moved beyond? You know,
Well, do you mean humans or aliens? Because if it's just humans,
humans.
Because when you have things like, I mean, this is going to be like an hour discussion, but like five seconds. I mean, you have like a Coda in Voyager. Janeway, of course, is very. Probably doesn't believe anything afterwards. You have Tapestry with TNG. Mm-hmm. I don't think Picard has ever really said. He seems to be very anti-religious. It seems like if you do Who Watches the Watchers, but I don't know what he really believes. And then Sisko has that sort of famous statement of his, is like, there are things I believe, or whatever that statement he says. I don't know if we ever really got into it with Enterprise. But humans, basically they don't say it all, I don't think.
Yeah. Well, in Harry Kim, I mean, when you wake up in a coffin,
he does that a lot
in space, you know, you start to believe things. All right. Yeah, this is it's a big discussion. And again, I think it's perfect for Matatrex. I wanted to bring it up. I didn't want to get into, I mean, we don't have time to delve into it in the depth that it deserves, but it is a point brought up in the episode. And it was a point of contention between one of the writers and Gene Roddenberry, apparently. So
maybe if we return to tomorrow, we can talk about it.
Yeah,
because tomorrow was yesterday.
Right. Yeah, well, and all our yesterdays were pretty good, if I think about it.
Well, we have all of our yesterdays to talk about it. So, yeah. Okay. So, one more thing that I want to talk about, and this is the final point before final thoughts. Bishay, music. Tell us about music on this.
George Duning composed the music for this, and George Duning did the original 310 to Yuma, but you mentioned the romantic music that he's done, and he actually did the episode Metamorphosis as well from season 2. It's the recent Ultimate Voyage tour played the track that plays underneath Kirk's famous Risk Is Our Business.
Did they? Okay, that's cool.
Business suite. So they use that. The Ultimate Voyage Tour, they did two different types of music. They would play a song and they would play video clips that were just a montage. And then they would actually play scenes from an episode and have the dialogue from the episode with the music underneath. And this is one of the ones where they played the dialogue from the music underneath. Generally, with the original series, there isn't a lot of music composed for each episode. They compose for about, you know, 5 or 6 or 7 episodes a season, and then the rest is just tracked. Yeah. This episode here, though, it was a partial score that George Duning recorded. Generally, they got about, you know, 28, 29, 30 minutes each episode, and this one was only 18 minutes. So most of it was new music, but there was some reused from throughout the season. But yeah, George Duning, he's done some romantic music for sure.
It's too bad he didn't write Sargon's theme, because I think that it would have probably had some slap bass in it.
Could have had some good lyrics too. Oblivion.
Maybe all the song lyrics would explain everything else that's going on in this episode.
That's right.
I think if you read the liner notes, man, this episode, woo, crystal clear.
Makes so much sense. Clear,
yeah. You could have done it over the credits, like the Disney songs.
I'm picturing like the album cover would be one of those orbs. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, the album cover is like Kirk, like feeling his chest in that. Look.
This album has a great body.
All right. Well, let's go into our final thoughts and our ratings for the episode. So, Zachary, what are your final thoughts? What's your rating?
Yeah, I don't think this episode is ever going to be one of my favorites, but...
But you like it a lot more after our conversation today, don't you?
I do, absolutely. You know, what I like about it, though, is that it has just a little bit of everything from the original series. I feel like I could take someone who's never seen the original series before, sit them down in front of this episode, and they would get a lot of Star Trek from just this episode. They'd get all the philosophical themes. They'd get evil Spock. They'd get Kirk hamming it up with the acting. You've got the godlike aliens. You know, down the list, it's just a very, very Star Trek-y kind of episode. But like I said, it doesn't really gel for me for a lot of reasons. I do like the philosophical themes. I have some new things I want to bring into Metatrex now to talk about. So look for those in an upcoming episode of Metatrex. As for a rating, I think I'm going to have to give this my first two-part rating on the Ready Room. I'm going to have to give it 7.5 out of 10 kisses from Dr. Pulaski, which, of course, causes 262 heartbeats per minute.
Wow. That is the most complex rating ever given on the Ready Room. All right. Philip, how about you?
Yeah, I mean, I agree that to me this is a very, in a good way, prototypical TOS episode. It does have everything. It's not bad at all. I don't think it's not bad at all. You know, and it's not maybe going to be the most greatest one maybe on your top five list. Well, maybe it is if you're maybe Brandon. But to me, it's like you know, this is it. This is a good 6.67 on the TOS scale. You get everything you want. I did notice, you know, it's one of those things in the 21st century, you don't really notice it, but I do like to point it out. We do get a person of color as a nurse who we've never seen before. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, there we go. Good. That's always good to see some representation on here. But I thoroughly enjoyed it. And I think for my rating, I'd have to give it 5 light balls.
Excellent. How about you, Bishay?
I enjoy this episode. I enjoy watching it. It's not one of my favorites. I do like it, though. I think it's a fun... I like Kirk's speech. I really enjoy it. It tugs on the heartstrings when you're watching it. But I'm really happy that we finally have learned that this is a sequel episode to Space Seed. But a flop.
Is it a sequel to Space Seed?
Well, this is all those seeds been thrown
just
around.
The seed.
Yeah,
just the
this
seed.
Is. You know what? In fact, Brandon, if this episode had been called Space Seed, that would have made sense.
Yeah, this is the plural Space Seeds.
That would have made perfect sense.
Space Seed, and then the Con episode could have been returned.
And
to
that would have made sense.
There you go.
I should name this Ready Room Space Seed, and everyone will think we're going to talk about Space Seed. All right. Okay, go ahead and continue.
So I'm gonna give my rating as one fine body.
Oh, wow. All right. Very all-encompassing rating right there. Well, my thoughts on this episode are pretty much what we've all said along the way, that it's a grab bag of all kinds of great ideas, as well as very classic TOS story elements. But it's all thrown together in a way that it just lacks cohesion. And it's an okay story, but it could have been a really great story if it had been better written. Or maybe if they had had 2 hours to tell it so they could have delved into everything else that was going on. But I don't think they really needed more time to tell the story. I think that they needed to just really think more about what they were writing and what the viewer knew and what the viewer didn't know. And just generally be more consistent with the powers that Sargon and his people had, what the crew knew or didn't know, and at least give some indication that there's a plan afoot instead of just springing it on us at the end, as they did when we find out about the Katra and we find out about everything else that Sargon has planned. So it's an okay episode. I do like Kurok's impassioned speech, even though I think that it's odd what he's saying. And the music is excellent as well. So I've been inspired, Zachary, by you to give a 2-part rating as well for this episode. I'm going to give it 3 scalpels and 1 spool of catgut. And Dr. McCoy may be very happy about that rating, or maybe not. All right. So before we go, thanks for joining us, Philip and Zachary. Before we go, tell everyone where they can find you around the network and around the interwebs. Philip, how about you?
Sure. They can find me each and every week here on the network, whether they want us or not. Here with Earl Grey, our Star Trek The Next Generation dedicated podcast, along with my wonderful co-hosts, Darren Moser and Daniel Prue. And they can find me on Twitter. My handle there is NC Public Servant. That's NC for non-corporeal light ball.
Excellent. Zachary, how about you?
Sure. You can find me co-hosting our show MetaTreks each week along with my co-host Mike Morrison. That's Trek FM show on Star Trek and philosophy. If you want to join us there and listen to us talk about all of the philosophical themes in every aspect of Star Trek. And you can also find me on Twitter. My handle there is just my name, Zachary Fruhling. That's at Zachary, Zachary Fruhling, Fruhling.
Very good. Well, thanks again for joining us today, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, Brandon, that was a lot of fun talking about Return to Tomorrow. I think we touched on some topics that were maybe a little bit deeper than I expected, especially considering how many times we went off the rails and were just completely joking around.
Yeah, I started, you know, getting hungry and I wanted to eat like, you know, some nuts or seeds or something, you know, like some sunflower seeds or some sesame seeds or something.
Is that because you were disembodied?
Yeah, that and they just kept talking about seeds for some reason.
Oh, that's true. There were a lot of seeds in this episode, no doubt. Yeah, a lot of poor choices in words, I would say, in this episode. But hey, it's entertaining, so that's okay with me. All right. Well, we would love to hear your thoughts on the discussion today. Anything we talked about regarding Return to Tomorrow, as well as anything we talked about in news. There are many ways for you to get in touch with us. Of course, if you want to have a conversation, the best place to go is the Babel Conference on Facebook. That's our closed listeners group. We have about 1,300 or so people in there right now talking about Star Trek all the time. It's a great place to extend the conversation beyond the shows into social media. The way you get there is just to go to Facebook and type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field. If you're not yet a member, you'll need to click join and we'll let you right on in. We do post the shows when we publish them. They get published to our brand page and we share those over into the Babel Conference. And then a conversation starts from there. So you'll see a post in the Babel Conference for this episode of The Ready Room and just chime on in to the comments and we would love to hear your thoughts on it. If you're not on Facebook, you can also find us on Twitter. Our username is TrekFM. You can also send us email by going to trek.fm/contact. Just use the form there, choose to send to a show and choose The Ready Room, and that'll come to me by email. And if you want to send me a voicemail, I'd love to hear your voice. You can do that by going to speakpipe.com/trekfm. That's the word speak and the word pipe together, .com/trekfm. You can record the message just using the mic on your phone or your tablet or your computer, and you can upload it there from the page as an MP3, and it comes right over to me. It's really simple. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the show today. Now, Bishay, when you're not searching for those seeds that you really want to eat, where can people find you elsewhere on the network and around the interwebs?
You can find me here on the network doing new episodes of Melodic Treks, which is all about the music of Star Trek. You can find me on many episodes of From There to Here, which is our 50th anniversary rewatch project. I've guest spotted on a few episodes here and there of commentary Trek stars and whatnot, so you can find me there. You can find me on Twitter at Brandon Metella. The best place, of course, though, is the Babel Conference. And on our at Trek FM Twitter and on the Babel Conference, I'm doing the Trek FM quote of the day. So you can search hashtag Trek FM QOTD. And I type a quote that makes me giggle or makes me think. So that's been a lot of fun.
And then people chime in and they guess the episode. And sometimes you talk more from there, right?
Yeah.
Especially on Facebook. All right. Well, that's great. And if you would like to find me, you can find me elsewhere on the network doing The Orb with Matthew Rushing. That's our show that's dedicated exclusively to Deep Space Nine. You can also find me on our short news show, Hyper Channel. And if you'd like to read my writing about Star Trek, you can find that over on the official website at StarTrek.com. Just search for my name, C. Brian Jones. You'll need to put spaces in there on that site. C. Brian, that's Brian with a Y, and Jones. And my articles should come right on up. That's also my username on Twitter, pretty much everywhere in social media, C. Brian Jones. And of course, I'm there in the Babel Conference as well. And I'd love to talk to you about Star Trek in that forum. I'd also like to thank our associate producers here on the Ready Room. It's thanks to them that we're able to bring this show to you. And our associate producers on the Ready Room are Renee Roberts, the wonderful Renee Roberts, who has been with us really almost since the beginning of the network. We would not be here today without Renee's help, and I really mean that. You know, the network has grown to be quite large. It wasn't always so large. And Renee really helped me keep things going at times when, you know, I wasn't sure that the network was going to stick around. So Renee, thank you so much for your support. And everyone, please thank Renee. You can find her on Twitter at Mares_1701. And also Sam Piasek supports us through Patreon and is an associate producer here on the Ready Room. Sam, I really appreciate your support. And this guy, Zachary Fruling, he keeps turning up everywhere. He's sleeping in the Ready Room now, apparently on a cot. He's also an associate producer. So, Zachary, thank you for your support. If you're listening and you would like to help us out here on the network and help us keep not only this show going, but of course, Brandon's show, Melodic Treks, and all the other shows that we have here, we could use your support. We are a listener-supported network. It costs a lot of money, and it's growing all the time to operate this network. To host the files, to get the shows out to you guys. We pay for bandwidth. It's quite expensive. We are pushing close to 7 terabytes of data per month right now. So it does take a lot of money to keep Trek FM going. If you would like to support us, you can go to patreon.com/trekfm to find out how. That's patreon.com/trekfm. You'll get information there about the perks that we have for you. We have the exclusive website Patron Zone, which has material that only goes out to our patrons. We also have the Roundtable, which, Bisha, you've been on the Roundtable, and I think you're going to maybe host a few of them too, right?
Yeah, I've been on the Roundtable quite a few times, so it's a lot of fun, and there's a lot of different topics all the time. So yeah, I'm definitely thrilled to be able to maybe host one or two coming up here.
Yeah, and that's a place where our Patreon supporters get together with hosts from shows on the network, and we sit down. And kind of like we do here on the Ready Room, we just pick a topic and we talk about it. And you can join with anything that you have. So it can be, you know, your iPhone, it can be your iPad. You don't have to have a fancy mic set up like we do here with the regular hosts. And we record that through our Zoom meeting system and we put it out there in the master feed for everyone to listen to. So that's a great perk that's available from the $15 per month level and up. And we have all kinds of other things for you there too. So please check it out, patreon.com/trekfm. And we really appreciate any support that you can give us. And we thank everyone who is supporting us right now. We really could not do this without you guys. You make the network go. So thank you so much. All right, Bisha. Well, that is it for today's discussion. I'm going to wander back down and check on that android that they created because I have no idea what happened to it after Thalesa decided she wasn't going to get inside the body.
Well, that sounds like a great idea, Chris. And it's time to stick Chapel's deadly hypospray in it because the Ready Room is done.